You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Today on Hooked on Startups, none other than Daniel Stafford and Robbie Switzer, who are founders of Shopinova. Now, if I switch over to the interweb, Shopinova helps online stores that are ready for massive growth be as shoppable as possible. Now, that's a fantastic strapline. I wish I'd thought of it.
It took a long time to get dialed in.
It does. It looks like it's one of those, you know, sort of taglines that is incredibly simple, delivers the message with the punch, but took 6 months to actually, you know, finish. Who was it that said, if I had more time, I would write less? Or if I had more time, I would have written less. That's right.
I don't know who that was. Steve Jobs.
It's got to be Steve.
Something like that. So tell me, I mean, guys, you know, welcome to the show. It's fantastic to have you on. You've got an incredibly interesting business that's right at the heart of, you know, driving traffic to e-commerce, you know, platforms. You have an incredibly cool website. So I'm very jealous. And I'm not jealous. I'm just, yes, I'm envious. Envious.
Thank you so much for having us on. We're excited to chat a little bit today about our story. And if we dive into what we do in e-commerce and stuff, that's going to be great. But we got a pretty special story for you, I think.
Yeah, go on then. I'd love to. How did it all happen? How did you guys get together? And what's the genesis? There you are. I've used that word. I can check it off my list.
Now it feels serious.
Yeah. So. Well, for like most people probably watching, you know, we were two young guys who had the entrepreneurial bug and we wanted to go out and do something amazing, make a ton of money, do something impactful. So
I was that once and look what happened.
But naturally, you know, coming from this small town of 5,000 people in Homer, Alaska that we do, we knew exactly how to go about doing that. You know, you go,
of
and
course, it's the epicenter of e-commerce. Alaska, yeah. Everyone knows that.
Well, what's funny is, you know, we were just, when we actually got started together in our career, it was actually just following this model that everybody else in front of us had done here in Homer, Alaska, and that's to go and take on an ungodly amount of debt, buy a commercial fishing operation, and then, you know, say goodbye to the friends and family for like months at a time, and then go see if you can catch fish. And that's where we started our professional lives, is, you know, on fishing boats as commercial fishermen. But we'll kind of expedite the story.
No. That in itself, I mean, you must have had some, so was that following in sort of the family footsteps, or was there just nothing else to do? So you go to the local job center and it's like fishing, net maintenance, engine repairs.
There's fishing. Oil work, there's construction, and there's fishing up here, Basically where we live. And so I actually was born and raised in Alaska, and my dad grew up fishing with his dad. Then I grew up fishing with my dad. And my dad's a local legend here. He's actually has a world record set. You know, he's really good at what he does. He loves it. And I kind of grew up in that. So naturally, like as I got older, I just thought that's what I'm going to have to do to provide for my family. And so I fished with them. I started when I was 3, going out on the boat with them. I was a full-time deckhand by the time I was age 10, which means I had full responsibility on the boat, getting paid like a normal crewman, which was awesome.
Did you have to pencil on a mustache and beard?
I still do that.
People would take you seriously.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I first learned penciling it on, is when I was on the boat. So
I can imagine you with a long trench coat and a hat. With someone sitting on your shoulders, you know, barking the commands, just as sort of... You know,
oh, that's good.
That guy's really strict over there. He's the new deckhand. You better do what he says.
Do what he says. He's got a mustache.
Yeah.
So anyways, it was a fun way to grow up, right? You're out on the water for months at a time, away from everything. Now, it's tons of marine wildlife around, lots of adventure, lots of hard work. And when you're 10, when you make $20,000 for a summer, you bring it home and you buy a new dirt bike and your friends think you're
awesome. You're a drug dealer or something. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or a bubble gum dealer or something, you know.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. But it was a really good way to grow up until the point when I got married and started having kids. And then it was like, oh, I got to be gone for months at a time, leave the family, leave my wife and everything. Yeah. But when I did get married, I decided, all right, it's time for me to start a life of our own, start a business of our own. So we did what Robbie just said, is we went $300,000 into debt, bought a fishing boat, and we're going to fish 3 months that summer, hoping the fish show up. That's another thing. It's like a big risk because you don't even know if the fish are going to show up that year. You don't know how much you're going to get paid for them if they do show up.
See, so kind of that in itself is a metaphor for what you're doing. If you think about it, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy looking back on it. But like I said, that was kind of the normal here. And so I just did what I knew to do. And I was like, all right, babe, it's time to start our own business. Here we go. Hang on. So got the boat all ready. We're having a killer start to the season and doing really good. And one day it got really windy on our way back into port. I was actually going to pick up my wife from port. And she was 9 months pregnant at the time, like about to have our first child. And we're heading back in and the wind starts picking up really heavy. And it's right on our stern and we're going in towards port and it keeps picking up, getting bigger. And then all of a sudden a big wave catches us and we surf down the face of it and it turns us hard over at the bottom and we just roll the boat. And this is like a 45-foot boat, you know, with three of us inside. We had 10,000 pounds of fish on board. And so it just kind of rolled over really quickly. We all locked eyes at each other, like every man for himself to get the hell out of this thing as it's capsizing, you know. Yeah. And I was luckily on the uphill side. So I opened the window and crawled out of the boat as it was rolling and stayed, you know, dry the whole time, walked over the bottom, stood on it. And I had my cell phone in my pocket and I called my dad who was fishing like a mile away. I was like, hey, we just rolled our boat. And he jumped in his little boat and started heading towards us. But then it seemed like eternity waiting for the crewman to pop up, you know, yeah. And finally one guy pops up and oh, thank God. The other guy, then the third guy took forever and we're all yelling for him. But luckily Patrick, he popped up too. He's actually works with us now still, which is pretty cool. He popped up. We all got onto the bottom of the boat. My dad picked us up and it was a pretty wild experience. Like,
was your dad annoyed with you for rolling the boat? I mean, it's like if you roll your car, your parents normally get really upset. Annoyed.
Boat rolling is a little different. You're just thankful that everyone's alive because a lot of times people roll boats out there, the whole crew goes missing and a lot of people die from it. So anytime.
So he didn't tell you off. I mean, presumably you were, so you're a bit older than 10 at that point. So
I was 23.
Yeah. God, I can just imagine that must have been, yeah, probably sort of slightly about an 11 out of 10 on the scary scale.
Yeah, it was very, very scary, especially after taking on all that debt, just getting married, having our first kid like on the way, literally a few weeks later. It was just kind of a lot at once. Like, hey, Daniel, welcome to adulthood.
Exactly. My dad baptism by fire. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
By the opposite, by water. Yeah.
Yeah. By water. Yeah. So what's funny is, you know, how do we go from something like this? And I'll kind of share what was going on in my life around this time, because I had a story that was kind of paralleling his. But how do we go from that to now running this e-commerce agency out of Alaska? And, you know, now we've over the last 6 years, we've generated our clients over $100 million
in revenue
directly attributed to our campaigns. We have like 40 full-time employees working with us. And it's this amazing thing, but that's the start of it. It's like us out on the water here in Alaska. It's like, what the heck? So around that same time, I had actually married his little sister. So we were always friends and we knew each other, but we went and we bought our own boat, took on a similar amount of debt. And I didn't actually roll my boat, thank God. But during this same time, you know, I was starting to have kids and what used to be really fun and just this lifestyle of like, you know, working really hard, but then also playing really hard. There was a lot of like freedom in the off season and resources to do cool, fun things. And it was kind of fun for a while, but once we started getting, you know, having kids and got married, it was so hard to leave the family. Yeah. And I remember being out there one night and there was this old man off in the distance kind of doing his thing. And it was like the end of the season. You just wanted to be home. I was thinking about my wife and my brand new daughter.
Yeah.
And this guy's just out there all alone. He's drinking. He's like pulling in gear. It looks dangerous. It's crappy weather. It's raining. I was like, you know, I don't really want to be out here.
The shape of things to come.
Yeah. I don't want that to be me in like 40 years or 50 years, whatever. So anyways, we were kind of talking about it, and after his traumatic experience and then, you know, me not really feeling like that was my future, we just had this idea to start pursuing a passion and kind of change the outlook of what our life was going to look like moving forward. Yeah. And there was a lot of things that kind of helped us build belief in something possible. You know, we both read the book Think and Grow Rich and had several conversations after that of like, you know, maybe we can make money in a way that's different than, you know, everybody else in this town. And maybe there is a better way to do it.
Yeah.
And it actually started with us when we were out on the boats. We always had a video camera with us. We just liked to make videos. And so we started became a video production company, and we started working with Alaskan companies to do video production. And what we didn't realize was happening, but what was cool is it started us on the journey of marketing. We were developing marketing assets, and we cared so much about our clients that we really wanted to know what the value of these videos were, because oftentimes we'd make a really awesome video and then they'd go and they'd post it on their website that nobody ever sees, or they'd post it on their social media account that has like 3 followers. And then they're like, okay, that was awesome.
This video didn't work.
I paid you a few $1,000, but my business isn't growing. And so we're like, oh yeah, that doesn't make sense. Like, how are we going to make this work? And so we did that for a year, but trying to figure out how to answer that question, long story short, led us into running traffic and learning to learn this game of paid advertising, whether that's through Facebook or Instagram or running, you know, paid media through Snapchat, like all these other things of paid media. And we just got more and more niched down into e-commerce. You know, it was a process of, you know, getting connected with mentors, getting our first few clients, and then really validating our services and starting to come up with case studies for these clients. And then once we like got our first case study, I feel like that's when our momentum really started to build, you know, as an e-commerce growth agency.
The amazing thing, though, is that what you've done, though, is you started without any preconceptions about how this is going to work. So you started by solving a real need, which was the need of your client at that time to try and get some traction for this video that presumably you had a huge amount of pride in. So you didn't want it withering on the vine. And so was there a lot of learning by mistake, or not so much learning by mistake, but trial and error? And did you find that there was a lot of received wisdom? In other words, this is how you should grow your business. But when you tried it, it didn't work. So were you building your own approach and really creating your own formula, as it were? And is that how you came up with these, you know, your approach that you have today?
Yeah, that's what was unique actually about us coming from commercial fishing. Like, client services is like the opposite end of the spectrum, right? So when we came into it, we were pretty blind. We didn't know how to start a business, how to run a business. We just knew we were passionate about something and we wanted to help people. And so that was kind of our guiding light in starting it. And we realized, oh, these aren't getting results. How can we get results? That's helped us over and over again in the industry where we don't have knowledge of, you know, how to do it the proper way, because we're having to find our own way. We've had lots of good mentors and stuff along the way that have definitely helped us. But there's also been times when we were first getting going where we're just trying a lot of stuff that people were telling us and nothing was working for a time. Mm-hmm. You know, so that it was very true for us of like, he's saying, do this. Okay, let's spend a bunch of time here. Oh, it's not really working. And the times where we've seen like the biggest leaps of growth is when we're listening to our gut or our intuition and, mm-hmm. and following that.
What's funny is I'm always torn. Like when I actually reflect on our journey of getting started, I always like, if I was going to give somebody advice, you know, I'm always torn between, you know, having a really good written out plan, an idea of how it's going to all work out, and just like a good business model to start, you know, getting clarity on and putting plans together and attacking it. You know, I find it's hard to balance that with this idea of just taking the first right step and kind of just, you know, letting doors open as you take the right first step. Because for us, we had no idea that this is where we were going to end up, but it was very important for us to at least get off the fishing boat and start trying something.
I think probably if you tried to write a business plan, it probably would have led you down a completely different path. You know, there didn't seem to be any logical connection between what you were doing and what you're doing now. So it is that sort of voyage of discovery, if you excuse the pun. And I think we get that a lot, really, don't you? With entrepreneurs who do fly by the seat of their, we've got aviation, fishing, we've got all these metaphors here. People flying by the seat of their pants, you do need to do that to a certain extent, I think, don't you? Because otherwise, you probably have developed amazing ability to react to situations and assess them in the cool light of day and say, okay, this is where we are today. This is what we need to do. So, you know, probably spending all that time in the boat has taught you not to panic and not to make rash decisions, but to sort of be able to react, you know, under fire, as it were. But I speak to someone the other day who's an engineer by trade. He had to, because the way that his mind worked, he had to try and set everything out. I don't think I've ever done that. I've done it retrospectively. You know, this is how I got here today, and probably this is what I need to do to avoid running out of money or something. But I think that's you know, hugely interesting advice.
Yeah, one of the gifts that came from being out on the boat too was just this gift of like a can-do attitude, but also a gift of innovation. Because if you're out on the water, you know, miles away from anybody, and you break down, but you don't know how to fix it, like, you're going to figure out a way.
There's no AAA, I don't think, is there?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. So when we found ourselves in situations like that, when we're, you know, maybe starting to run our first campaigns, trying to, you know, get the first results for some of our first clients, it's like, well, we know that this is an avenue for making them money. You know, maybe what we're researching isn't really panning out, but we know there's a way, and we know that you need to market a company to make them grow. And just kind of like believing that it was going to work out one way or the other, and just staying pressed into the process of, you know, trial and error, you know, testing, validating. Yeah. And I feel like that was a huge advantage for us, because when we're in these, we also joined a few like masterminds where we're in programs with people, you know, at a similar journey than us, trying to figure out how to build and grow their agency, trying to figure out how to get their clients results. And, you know, some people would have this attitude where it's like, it's very pessimistic, and they're saying, you know, this was all a scam, and, you know, we're doing the same work and we're both actually kind of seeing the same results, but we had a totally different belief where we're saying, you know, these failures, this is just us. These are learning lessons. Yeah. This is experience. This is building blocks. And eventually we're going to figure out how to do it. And so even though we're getting the same education, doing the same input, even getting the same results, but we had two different beliefs, it gave us two very different destinations. Yes. And I think that's one thing that was really powerful too, is just like, and that's what the book Think and Grow Rich did for us, was actually, you know, gave us a very firm belief that we could make something work, you know, even if it's video production, but eventually it turned into, you know, an actual paid ads agency.
The key word, I think, is innovation, isn't it? So if you went to all of these masterminds, did you find that there was a lot of me too or sameness in terms of the messages from all of these different groups? In other words, people were just recycling the same approach over and over again.
Yeah. I feel like we saw that a lot, and that we're at the point now where are we in a mastermind right now?
No,
we're not right now, because we started, like you said, started seeing a lot of the same Me Too stuff, regurgitated information, stuff that I don't know, a lot of fluff is what it felt like to us, and no one being real, honest, vulnerable, what's actually not working, the struggles of running their business. It was all like selling you on only the good side. And we kind of got tired of that and burned out of it on it.
Well, what's funny too is I feel like you said it seems like you're experiencing a lot of the same faces and a lot of people trying the same thing. And that's just really hard for the consumer when there's, you know, everybody lined up, they're saying the same things, they're all promising the same things, they have the same offers, same pricing, and there's really no differentiation between you and, you know, the guy next to you who's providing the same service. And so I think when breakthrough really started to happen for us is when we're like, you know what, we're going to throw all that out the window. And we're actually, you know, coming from little Homer, Alaska, we were embarrassed about that for a long time. But it was actually when we started owning our story and we're like saying, yeah, we're an e-commerce marketing agency in Alaska. And, you know, that was like, would catch people off guard and like, oh, wow, that's interesting. And just kind of building on this and kind of our story of resiliency, you know, from him rolling the boat. And, you know, the early years were very difficult, and us kind of incorporating this into our marketing, that actually propelled our business. And now what's funny is we encourage our clients to do the same thing, because we work with a lot of people who are, you know, apparel brands, and they are most of the time, people are putting out their best impression of like a faceless corporation, and people buy from people. So they're really wanting to experience an authentic brand. And so we actually encourage people to follow a similar journey where it's like, you know, own the failures, own the journey, and own the brand, and put a little bit of yourself into it, because that's what people are going to buy from.
And so what made you focus, or what was the pathway that led you to this particular vertical? So what was the journey there? So you talk about e-commerce, you say that you sort of niched down, I have to call it niche, sorry, the e-commerce. So what did you try and that didn't resonate with you?
Well, I think for me, I really liked e-commerce because we could see start to finish the impact we were creating.
Yeah.
Whereas if we were, you know, trying to create, you know, leads for a realtor or, you know, some type of lead generation service through paid ads, there was so much in their sales process that we didn't know. You know, once they get, they make the contact, it's up to them to hop on the phone and close a deal. And then, you know, how many deals are they actually closing? What's their revenue compared to what we're spending in ads and stuff like that? Whereas with e-commerce, we could see every step of the buyer's journey. And what was cool about understanding that is realizing that there's then benchmarks of, you know, how many people need to see the ad to get a sufficient amount of traffic to the website. Yep. And out of that traffic, how many people need to view products, add to cart, you know, initiate a checkout and eventually purchase. And then it really clearly highlights if you have a bottleneck somewhere in your sales process. So for us, it was a logical decision on, we feel like if we have the information available, we're going to be able to dial in growth a lot better.
Yeah, I can see it's that measurability, isn't it? Sorry. Mm-hmm. See, it's the instant results, I think, isn't it? That, or the instant feedback that allows you to sort of finesse the machine.
Yes, 100%. And we used to take on anyone and everyone. We did a lot of lead generation, a lot of core sales, stuff like that. But we saw we first of all, we enjoyed e-commerce more and the direct ROI we were able to get for our clients. But then looking out over like, say, 10 years, we just saw how quickly e-commerce was growing and kind of wanted to be a part of that wave. And we had a lot of friends kind of starting e-commerce businesses as well. And so it was just kind of like this buzz around us where we knew like this is going to be the future and it's going to only keep growing. So let's really hone into this niche.
And do you find that the work that you're doing is more of a science based on the information that you receive today, as opposed to sort of gut instinct? And is the amount of data that you're getting, does that enable you to become much more predictive than perhaps you thought you could be?
There's definitely an element of that. What's funny is, you know, when we're talking about e-commerce, like Daniel said, that was an industry we saw growing and we really wanted to be a part of. And then COVID happened and then it really blew up because everybody's shopping from home and they're in their homes and they don't really want to go into brick and mortar stores anyways. So that happened and we had a big boom of business there. But then there's also a huge push towards privacy, data privacy.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the measurability is actually getting stripped away from us. And we actually know less now today than we did, you know, 12 months ago. And so what's funny is now we're having to reinvent all of our strategies because there is less visibility.
And this is the new approach that Apple's taking, presumably. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Yep.
Reducing the amount of information that's shared with, you know, with third parties.
Yeah. And so marketers have for so long relied on that information to take this buyer's journey, this marketing process, and turn it into a science. But you can only do that if you have the data necessary to do that. And now they've taken that away from us. So for a while, we had a very granular idea of, you know, what was going on. Now that's being stripped away. And so we're actually now in a season where we're shifting away from the science and back to the art of, you know, whoever has the best content strategy is going to win. And really back to the basics and the Wild West of like content marketing. Yeah. But we're still using these tools of paid ads to really amplify it and allow people to scale once something is working.
And I say too, when it was just us, we relied a lot more on gut instinct, even for running ads and stuff, because we didn't understand the data as well as someone that had been doing it for years. And so we're just testing and trying things that we thought would work. But as we began, and we were getting good results doing it, but as we began to scale the team, we had to turn it into more of a science or be more scientific about it so that other people could follow it, right? And it was scalable for our clients and as we're growing the business.
So if it's back to sort of basics, as it were, I mean, the basics, as far as I understand it, you've got audience and you've got copy. It's what you say and who you say it to. I think there are two schools of thought. You know, it doesn't really matter what you say as long as you say it to the right audience. And the other school that says, look, it's absolutely about what you say. And it doesn't matter if you say, if the message is right, then the audience becomes very, very much secondary. So as you're now sort of going back into the real basics, the real psychology, I suppose, of connecting with customers, what are you uncovering? What are you revisiting that is surprising you?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of pioneering going on right now. Yeah. We're trying a lot of different things, but for a long time, we would start with very specific audiences, like you said, and we'd start out with very general messaging. And now we've, like you said, we've actually almost flipped that, where on the front end, we're doing a lot of rapid fire testing across very broad audiences to basically allow people to start self-identifying with the message, with the ads, yeah, and then kind of hone in from there. And so I think the shift, you know, as far as strategy goes for these e-commerce stores, is it's really being less focused about, you know, getting the right high quality, small audiences and just getting ad creative that actually is pulling people out of the masses and attracting them toward your brand.
And is that, so everyone's in the same boat again, forgive the pun there, but everyone, it's anything that happens online, any sort of online transaction has been really affected by this, this sort of Apple's new technology. Does that give you a big advantage, do you think, because of your ability to know and to be able to react when lots of other agencies who have relied completely on the numbers find mm-hmm. themselves, I'm going to do it, sorry, like a fish out of water.
There it goes again. Yeah, we very much think along those lines. And even when all these changes were happening, these big announcements, marketers were freaked out. Everyone was panicking, thinking they're going to lose all of their clients right away. But we told our team, we're like, look, guys, we think things happen for us, for our business. We're going to stay agile and we're going to stay on top of this and figure it out. And this is actually going to give us a leg up on the competition. And so from the very beginning, you know, our director of results was very diligent about researching, like, how can we, you know, we found different tracking software we were able to start using and how can we stay ahead of this? And it's really, really mm-hmm. served us and the whole team. It's almost this excitement of, hey, we're reinventing this and we're all doing this together.
Mm-hmm. There's still sufficient data available to do a lot of really cool things, a lot of really cool data-driven strategies. It's just changed. And the cool thing is, you know, anybody who's in this industry knows that it almost changes daily. And yes. So we've always viewed those changes as, like Daniel said, an advantage, because we're fully committed to making sure we figure things out whenever something does change. We're actually excited because anybody who's just getting started or maybe not fully committed to staying on top of everything, that's where they're just slowly going to be falling behind. And so we like the changing landscape.
Yeah. I mean, can we talk about the systems that you use as well? Because one of the big issues with e-commerce and online transactions is knowing what's real and what isn't. So there's a lot of, I suppose, click fraud. In other words, where you've got non-human interactions that are creating false results. And I've certainly seen lots of software that's being developed to try and go underneath what appears to be happening. So what's your experience of the concept, what most people understand, what they think is happening, but the reality in terms of what actually really happens behind the scenes with all these different, sort of software engines that are designed to, create false realities?
Yeah. So if we get too far down the technical rabbit trail, we'll start to sound less and less intelligent, because our director of special ops, he has a really good grip for this. But long story short, for a long time, we and many other agencies relied on the Facebook Pixel integration for all of their data. And this is a snippet of code you put in your website and gives you all your standard events, whether that's a page view, an add to cart, you know, if somebody purchased, how many items they purchased, what the conversion value of that. And then that all goes into Facebook Ads Manager, and you understand, for the most part, what's happening with the ads you're pushing out there. A lot of that went away with the iOS 14 updates and with everything that Apple's doing towards privacy. And so now we've developed a strategic partnership with tracking software called Hyros. This is an Alex Becker company. I don't know if you know who he is, but it's a different way of going about the tracking, and it's doesn't like break any laws. It's completely ethical, but it's basically running off of the server in the website that they own. And so they're still allowed to see, you know, what's going on their website. And then there's a way for this software to be able to talk, you know, with Facebook Ads Manager without having to use the pixel, which is fairly limited right now for a number of reasons. So it gives us real-time information of, you know, consumer behavior. But then it also gives us very valuable data that we can interject into the algorithm of Facebook to help it continue to optimize. Because that's one thing that's super helpful is when you know, if you have a certain objective for a campaign that you're running, you know, whether that's in you want to see add to carts or conversions, every time that happens, you kind of like give it a pat in the back that it's going in the right direction. So when that's stripped away, it doesn't have a compass for knowing whether or not it's successful, if it's like testing different audiences for you and stuff like that. So HiROS gives Facebook the ability to do that still. And it's not in a way that's invasive on privacy. It's ethical. And so we're really excited about that. And that's something we offer to all of our clients as you know, part of working with us.
That's one of the biggest challenges, I think, isn't it? First of all, I mean, the clients that come to you, do they come to you when they're at the end of their tether, as it were, where they've looked, you know, we've tried everything? Because is it a tough job trying to convince a company that you can do a much better job than they can?
Yeah. And we try to stay away from like being the people's last resorts, because we don't want them to spend the rest of their money on us and then have to pour a ton of money back into ad spend. And if it doesn't work out, then they're just like bankrupt. So we prefer people coming in that have validated products that are seeing some success organically. And that's when our strategy starts working really well for those people. A lot of people actually don't really understand paid marketing at all, at least the clients that we work with. And so it's very easy to show them our value once we do start implementing the strategy. When they have a good organic system, they have good creative, they have good branding, all that, they see results fairly quickly. Some people take up to 6 months, 12 months, but a lot of people in the first 3 months, they're noticing the effects from our marketing. Mm-hmm. So I almost hate to attract businesses that were their last dying hope, you know, because I don't want to be that guy that sells them on something that's not fully going to work for them. Cause a lot of times just pouring more money on a dumpster fire
So it's challenging. So the more you know about your business, then that actually makes you quite selective, because as you say, you don't want to work with the people that have tried everything themselves, because they're, you know, they think that they can do it all. So it is. And just talking about, you know, these new technologies that you're bringing in, it is an incredibly complex, fast moving, specialized sector. There is no room for guesswork. It's all what you're saying. It's trial and error. It's testing, you know, on many different levels. And I think that's what many people don't understand. They don't understand the amount of, you know, testing or science or, you know, the amount of product, you know, knowledge and specialization that you guys have to be able to do what you do. And is that a common sort of myth that you come across?
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy because it's changing for everyone, right? Everyone's doing the same thing. So you can't just be like, go ask someone like, how do you do this stuff? Yeah. Because they're doing the same stuff of trial, error, testing, mm-hmm. you know, it's everyone's in it together, and it's not, you can't go to a university to learn it. It's on the fly, changing every day. So it does become a real challenge for a director of results, Wyatt, of always staying on top of things, always rewriting our internal SOPs, you know, always re-educating people. So it is hard to stay on top of.
I think that's probably where your initial experiences on the boats have given you the strongest foundation possible, because every day is different when you're fishing. I would imagine you can't predict the weather. You can't predict where the fish are going to be. So you have to continually reassess. I mean, what do I know? You know, I mean, I think I've been on a ferry once. That's about it. But and it stayed the right way up. Thank goodness. You know.
Yeah. I'd say that's pretty accurate.
It's very accurate.
I think another thing that happens is, since marketers are marketers, basically they view, you know, marketing services as like a silver bullet to fix their business or make something happen that was, you know, they have 100 other issues that they need to address before they're even ready to dump money into paid advertising and start scaling their volume of orders. And so if there was one thing I wish we could do, and maybe we'll eventually do it, you know, as another phase of our business, but there's a lot of people who come to us hoping that our ads will take them from being, you know, nothing to one of the best e-commerce businesses out there. And the reality is they just need like some basic business principles, but they need some basic business consulting because there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, the marketing is just a function of running a healthy business. So there needs to be sufficient income to be able to invest in that. You need to be able to figure out how to have strategy around the way you purchase and hold inventory. There's a lot of stuff that just comes down to really getting in the nitty gritty of somebody's numbers. And we try to guide people through that as much as possible. Our account managers are really good at that. And they actually provide a consulting element to the services we provide. But there's a whole heap of knowledge that can be super beneficial to a lot of the people that come to us for help. And like you said, the more you know, the more selective you become.
Yes.
And that's been a little bit of a painful process at times too, because we don't want to bring anybody on that we don't feel 100% confident that we can help them. But it's also really sad to turn somebody away.
No, yeah.
Because then there's, you know, there's another agency who will say yes, and they will promise them the world, even though, you know, maybe they see the holes and they're ignoring it, or maybe they just don't care about that, or maybe they're unaware. And so I wish we could provide that, you know, that basic level of business knowledge there as well.
I think that could be, I mean, I can see that sort of growth into that area being quite exciting, because it is building on knowledge that you've already got. So it's not as if you're moving into a sort of completely, here we go again, uncharted waters. I just can't help myself. I'm not doing it on purpose, honestly. There's some sort of, you know, switch that is designed to sort of, you know, go on to make me look a complete idiot in front of you. But but it's my last sort of question on this before we move into the quick fire round. Is there still a place for newspaper advertising and, you know, stuff that you shove through, you know, in people's mailboxes? Is that disappearing? Is that still active? Is there still a place for that?
We might have different answers on this.
Yeah, why don't you go first?
I think there is. I just think you need to figure out when is the most appropriate time to invest in those. I think when I observe e-commerce brands that are doing really well, they start with the most efficient way to acquire a customer, which happens to be some form of digital marketing, whether that's through Facebook ads, Instagram, TikTok, whatever. And they're building up a customer base. But then, you know, a whole nother phase of their growth is creating this omnipresence, this brand authority, and just getting tons of brand awareness. And then you see, you know, these kind of startup brands all of a sudden showing up on TV commercials or potentially, you know, in mail outs and stuff like that. So I think it starts with necessity of, you know, building your customer base, building your revenue, all of that. But then I think there's definitely, if you want to continue growing as a brand, there's definitely opportunity to be indulging in older forms of marketing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say if someone came up to me and asked me, you know, how should I market myself right now, and they're starting any type of business, I probably wouldn't push them towards newspaper or print.
Yeah,
if I'm honest. But like Robbie said, you know, you got to know your audience and where they are. Maybe it's an older demographic you're going after that does read the newspaper and the ads in them, and they're gonna shoot over to your store after reading it. But for us and our customer base and even our business, like most people are on Facebook and Instagram and Google, you can cover 90% of the people with that. So,
and your customers, I mean, range from small startups to large conglomerates, or do you focus on a particular size of business?
We kind of all over the place. We don't have any massive, huge brands that you would have heard of, but a lot of our customers are around the $20,000 to $50,000 a month mark when they're reaching out to us. And then we have people that are doing all the way up to $2 to $3 million a month. So kind of all in that range.
So it sounds like you're ideally suited to the, you know, the small to mid market guys that presumably just don't think they have access to this level of intelligence or capability. So you're bringing, you know, the Saatchi and Saatchi, I'm not sure if they still exist, but you know, that sort of style, you know, down to a level where people can not just afford it, but actually, you know, benefit from it and grow from it.
Yeah. And it's a fun demographic to serve because, you know, someone that's doing $20,000 a month and then, you know, gets all the way to $150,000 a month, it changes their life, right? You see them hire people, they're moving houses, they're expanding their business. totally life-changing. But if we were to do that same increase, you know, increase for a big brand, you don't notice the same life-changing effect it has. So it's part of the reason we really enjoy kind of the size of businesses we work with.
Well, fantastic. Good. No, hugely exciting. So, you know, what's in store next? What's the next big leap, I suppose? And you mentioned the possibility of setting up a sort of like a consulting vertical, but is there something really big on the horizon that you're very excited about?
Yeah, there is. We're launching creative services along with our marketing services. So that's a big thing that we run into where we feel like we could serve people better and a lot more people if we offered, you know, the website design and build out from ground up, if we offered the video, the photography, the logo, the branding, like all of that, in addition to the
paid almost app. Back to the beginning.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
totally. Yeah. So that's, we're rolling that out next, and it'll take us maybe a couple quarters to get fully implemented, but that's been in the works and we're super excited to be.
I can imagine that, because then you've got control of, you know, the creative side and, you know, the position. Mm-hmm. So you can really, you know, put your arms around it and make sure that you, you know, get the best results. Huh?
Yeah. And we've worked with assets that they already have. And then we've kind of, you know, helped them get optimized on that with limited services, but now we're excited to offer the whole thing.
Yeah, that's good. No. And there is nothing more exciting than seeing these creatives come together and seeing, you know, that, that moment when you look at a piece of artwork and you just think, this is it. It's just encapsulated everything we ever wanted the brand to say in that one image or that one, you know, 5 second segment of video. So it's very, very, you know, it feeds the soul, I think.
It does. The creative side is such a blast. And we have Josiah here who does all our internal ads, you know, and we have so much fun creating ads and being involved in the creative process. So we are super excited to offer that to our clients now.
Yeah, well, watch this space. Huh. Good. Well, I'm now going to ruin everything by heading on to our quick fire round. Now, I'm not sure how you want to do this, but I think we should ask.
There's two of us.
There's two of you. So I'm going to get two answers on each question.
All right, perfect.
Now, there are 45 questions in this. No, I'm just kidding. Number one, there's 10 questions, actually. Robbie, this is to you. What is your favorite word?
Inspire. I like the Latin root of that where it says it's literally to breathe life into something.
Inspire, to breathe. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Fantastic.
Mine's a lot less hard. Mine's nice. And I just say it all the time when someone says something, I'm just like, nice.
But it is a much... it's a very underused word, nice, I think. And again, it's a bit like the F word, has all this sort of fabulous intonation in it. Question number two to you, Robbie. What is your least favorite word?
Bully. I don't like bullies.
Hey, that's a purse. That's a person. That's not a word.
Well, it sounds weird too. Bully. Yeah, I just don't like it.
I think it's like, you know, if you say it over and over again, then I think all words start sounding very peculiar.
So what I had for this one was moist. I just don't like the way it sounds or what.
That's,
I don't
know. To some, that is their favorite word. So that's what makes a market. Isn't that incredible? Yeah. Question number three. What are you most excited about right now?
I'm just excited for summer. We, you know, here in Alaska, we look forward to those summer months. Yeah, so,
is that where you get 5 hours of sunshine rather than four?
Well, it's actually
20 hours of sunshine.
Yeah, that's it, where the sun just doesn't go away. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So for me, it's moving into our new house. We've been in a rental for the last 8 months and our new home just finally got built. And so we just moved in and it's really exciting time for it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Particularly, is it your design? Is it you built it?
Yeah, we actually found a cool design online that we really liked the layout of, and then we just edited it down to like exactly what we wanted.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, everyone's dream. What sound or noise? Sorry. Question number four. I'm going to resign, get someone proper to do this. Number four, Robbie, what turns you off right now?
I don't like this idea of grinding away your joy. We like having a good balance between personal life and professional life and keeping everybody happy.
Do you know that is actually quite poetic, you know, grinding away your joy. That's, you know, can I have that?
It's all yours.
That is very good, dude. Mine are so much more surface level today. So I was just thinking about it. Mine's masks. I just get annoyed putting a mask on and like breathing my own breath.
Yeah. It's a bit of a reality check, isn't it? Oh my God, do I really? Yeah. Number five, Robbie, what sound or noise do you love?
I love when you're at like a lake or the ocean and it's flat, glassy, calm, and you pick up a big handful of pebbles, you throw it across the water. It's just this nice, like,
yeah.
So I can't make it the noise, but it's very.
No, boring. I know that. So that rhythmic and the rhythm increases as the pebble gets further away.
Exactly.
Daniel, cool. How about mine you? What sound or noise? Sorry.
Mine has to do with water as well. And mine's waves, like not huge waves, but when you're walking along the beach and it's just nice waves crashing along the beach, super peaceful and kind of serene feeling.
Fantastic. Question number six, Robbie, what sound or noise do you hate?
Squeaky brakes. I don't like them.
For me, it screams. It's like when my kids scream super high pitch and I think one of them's like dying or something, then I go and they're just messing with me. I don't know.
Kids, eh? Love them. Number seven, Robbie, what's your favorite curse word? And you can plead the fifth if you wish.
Yeah, I'm not a big curse word person, but I find myself saying, dang, nabbit.
I'm not sure if we're going to be able to. I think we're going to have to cut that out, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we have to edit that out. So are we can say the word on here. No,
you can
problem.
Say whatever you like. This is, I mean, you know, this is entirely, this is a grown up audience. Yeah.
So you alluded to it earlier, but my favorite word's fuck, because there's so many different uses for it. And there's almost an art to it sometimes, the way you say it. So.
Yeah, I think that in fact, I think fuck is actually the primordial molecule from which everything has been built. You know, the world, people came from the fuck molecule, whatever that is. Because you've got, fuck that for fuck's sake. I mean, it's just brilliant. It's just the most flexible. You know, if fuck was an element, you could build anything out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I love about it.
Number eight, Robbie, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Being an artist, painter, doing fine art paintings.
Which, by the way, he's really good at.
Yeah.
Is that a plug? You want to plug your website?
Please, yeah.
That's all right. I love painting. It's a fun hobby for me. Might be fun to try one day.
So I thought of like an extreme sport would be cool. So I put skydiving.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Skydiving would be great.
Yeah, you got to watch that because it's the bump at the end is,
Yeah, it can be a little rough. It
can be a lot of paperwork involved. Question number nine, what profession would you not like to attempt, Robbie?
I don't think I would ever like to be a litigator.
Oh, that's a good one.
You could be one of those court artists, though.
Oh, there you go.
You could be halfway there.
Yeah, that could work.
You could sort of accentuate their noses or the defenders. They could have big ears and sort of hairy noses, like trolls.
So I would never want to start a band.
Well, yeah, I think if I started a band, I would be the first person to be fired, and I would probably fire myself. Yeah,
same. I just have no gifting for it. And, you know, as fun as like packing out a stadium sounds, it's not for me.
Yeah, imagine, I just imagine you. I'm afraid that Daniel has left the building. Yes. And my final question then, Robbie, to you, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Welcome home. I'm proud of the man you chose to be.
Oh, fabulous.
Mine's simple. It's well done, bud.
Well, you know, it's been an absolute pleasure. So, you know, Robbie and Daniel, final question. How do people find out more about you? How do they get hold of you? How do they begin the journey of benefiting from your huge knowledge, experience, passion? How do they get in touch?
Shopanova.com is the best way to get a hold of us.
Yeah, and we got an e-com growth show on there people can watch. We got three seasons out now with a ton of great content, lots of interviews with people. We got some free resources too on how to get your store to convert better, all that good stuff. So yeah, if they just head over to our website, they can learn more.
Fantastic. Well, it's been a huge, huge pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for joining me. And, you know, I look forward to staying in touch and, you know, watching, you know, your company explode as a Shopanova becomes the supernova. So thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much. This is fun. Nice to meet you.